This talk was given by Danica Shoan Ankeley at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shoan is a senior monastic in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
From Shoaku Makusa by Dogen Zenji. Refrain from unwholesome action. Do wholesome action. Purify your own mind. This is the teaching of all Buddhas. So these are the opening lines from the fascicle that we are taking up this Anga. And what I wanted to do is to pull out that instruction on purify your own mind and look at that a little bit. So I think typically within Buddha Dharma, when we hear a phrase, purify your own mind, there's an instruction there about how to work with the mind so that you're clearing away the so-called mental defilements, the obscurations, the mud that's concealing the diamond, your Buddha nature. And in Zazen, we learn one way, very direct way of working with the afflictive states of mind, and it's through concentration and through learning how to kind of calm the endless waves of turmoil that are manifested in our thinking mind and in our emotional body. But I would like to look at this another way today. I would like to look at purify your own mind. I'd like to look at that as illuminate, to purify in terms of it's already pure, so let's turn on the bright light of awareness and see that. To illuminate your own mind. So what is practice? Here we are, we're all practicing. Some of us have given our lives to it. What is it? What are we actually doing? I was speaking with someone earlier this week about, this understanding of life as a journey. Like, what does that mean when we say that? And what is a spiritual journey, if we look at life as a spiritual journey? What is that? You can look at it in juxtaposition. So there would be one way of appreciating life as perhaps a journey of accumulation, right? So we're gonna go through our life and try and get as much stuff and as much money maybe as many experiences and kind of amass and gather, collect. And this is a way that some of us live our lives. We can also look at it as a journey of accomplishment, of doing things, of giving rise to ambition and fulfilling that ambition and making things happen, and maybe, amazing things and wonderful things, maybe creative things. And we can also look at it as a journey of transformation, of maturing into ourselves, of refining and developing our own beingness, so that our life is changing us and we are changing ourselves. And so that's kind of how I think of a spiritual journey, a journey of transformation. And genuine transformation is going to come from understanding. So how do we understand this life that we're living, what we're in the midst of, what's happening, We might call this understanding wisdom, which is a word we hear a lot, prajna. And we should also appreciate that this understanding is emerging from how we see, but also how we are. It's emerging from our heart. It's emerging from opening our heart and allowing ourselves to feel deeply and actually touch in with the connection. Learning how and what love is. To illuminate the mind, to illuminate the heart, to see the mind and know the mind, to allow this heart-mind to dwell in its natural connection, its natural peace, its natural love. So this is a journey from bewilderment, confusion, and pain into clarity and connection and warmth. And to purify, you know, if I think of my extremely limited scientific experience, suggests, you know, like boiling something down or like getting out your beakers and your Bunsen burner and like heating it and refining it until you've got just the pure essence of a thing. Like an alchemy. And I think that there's truth to that. And I also think that there is, you know, if we're going to recast this a little bit as illumination, seeing into, that we actually, from a Dharma perspective, what we see into is that we don't need to get out the Bunsen burner or refine in that way. We just need to deeply and correctly understand. In Zazen Shin, another fascicle by Dogen Zenji, Dogen says, so this is a teaching on Zazen, on the practice of Zazen, the practice of seated meditation. Dogen says, do not value what is far away and do not despise it. Become completely familiar with it. Do not despise what is near at hand and do not value it. Become completely familiar with it. To become completely familiar is to illuminate. So if we want to illuminate our own mind, we have to become completely familiar with it, which may not be very pleasant. I've been reading a book called Moonbeams of Mahamudra, and just the introduction alone has given me so much food for thought and help. And the introduction is by Traleg Kyabon Rinpoche, who has done this translation of what is a traditional Tibetan Buddhist text on meditation. Mahamudra is just another school of meditation practice, very, very much based in sitting still and working with your mind, not so different from what we do. And so he says, instead of trying to understand ultimate reality or ultimate truth, we simply learn to become more familiar with ourselves. As a result, many of our anxieties, fears, angers, and frustrations will subside. When we know our own minds, we will begin to understand ultimate reality. But without that self-understanding, ultimate reality will just be a version of whatever we believe it to be. We cannot have an experience of ultimate reality without self-understanding. So as a Zen practitioner, and I think about how I came to practice and what drew me to this monastery and what has kept me here, there has always been a longing for transcendence. You know, it's kind of like, get me out of here. Samsara sucks. I want out. Where's the like quickest route to like the other realm? And slowly, 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 over time, I see like, oh, there is no transcendence. There's no transcendence. But there is illumination. So this is it. We're stuck with this, okay? But if we can understand what's happening, then we're not in that state of bewilderment. We're not confused, we're not in the throes, we're not suffering. If we can start to understand our own mind, that's just the doorway. I mean, that's the whole thing and it's the doorway. If you understand your own mind really, truly, completely, to the degree that you can understand and do understand your own mind, you are illuminating your understanding of all of reality. But you have to start here. So if we try and skip over this, we're just going to be confused. To know our own mind, you know, to enter into maybe the murk or the swamp. So, you know, you suit up, you put on those waders or your muck boots, and you've got your, like, net and your bug hat, mosquito netting. And, you know, it's like, oh, God, here we go. I'm going out there. And in we go, and like, and the smell, and it's awful. But wait. Wait, relax. Don't be so quick to know. Don't be so quick to judge. Don't be so quick to be offended or to take it personally. Instead, start to look. Start to look. So like those larvae, like swimming in the muddy water, like, ew. And then like really look, like, whoa. Oh my God, there are thousands of them. They're so delicate. The mud, the debris, the detritus, you get closer. Oh my God, there's like living things in here and roots. And so the closer we get, the more, there is no swamp. That swamp was just an idea in our minds. Our thought of like, ugh, I don't want to look at myself. I hate that about myself. I'm so neurotic. Or whatever. You fill in the blanks. Get closer. Look. A little bit disinterested, or not disinterested, but you know, not so personal. To the degree that we can relate with the teaching that there is no self, like this is a good time to bring that to mind. Like we don't have to be so caught. What's going on? What am I feeling? What am I thinking? Why? Why am I acting like that? Can we start to appreciate actually the intricacy and the beauty in its own strange, miraculous way of samsara, of our karma, even if it's painful, just to see what is happening here. That quality of bewilderment, you know, we speak about the three poisons, greed, anger, and ignorance, as kind of the characteristics of our human mind, our delusion, that are keeping the wheel of samsara turning, endlessly. So our own bewilderment, our own confusion about who we are and what's going on, if as long as that's our state, even if we like manage to leap over it for a minute and get like a glimpse of clarity and insight, like it's not gonna last. We're just gonna go back on the wheel because we don't really see what's happening. We don't really understand. And then once we understand or once we gain some insight, then we actually have to use that insight to change our life. We have to make different choices. We have to do things differently. So it's also not enough to turn on the lights and illuminate things. Then our action has to be impacted. It has to be transformed. So, you know, for example, I was thinking about living up the hill here at the monastery. Let's say it's time for dawn zazen and you're trudging down the hill and your flashlight's not really working, and like whoosh, the next thing you know, you're flat on the ground, right? And there's that feeling of total bewilderment, like, whoa, wait, what just happened? It happened so fast. And then down there on the ground, it's like, okay, wow, yeah, I guess I slipped, obviously. You shine the flashlight, oh, there's some ice there. I didn't see that. My flashlight's not really working, it's dim. In fact, it's dim because last night, as I was getting ready to go up the hill, I turned it on, it wasn't really working, but I was so tired because it had been a long day and I didn't change the battery, and so da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And we can start to see, like, oh, okay, I ended up here on the ground, we see into it, right? It's from a very actually observable chain of cause and effect. And if I wanted to, I could go back and back and back. So I was tired that night because I had a long day, because duh, 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 right? Amazing. Life is amazing. So great. So I see this. Now, what this means is the next time that I'm tired and cranky and it's been a long day and I turn on my flashlight and it's not really working, I should stop. Like, go to the closet and get the battery out and change it, because I know now, I know. Oh, what happened before? So this is how transformation happens. From our confusion, we gain insight, we see into it, and then we have to act differently. We have to do things differently. If all of those pieces are in place, our life will transform. If we've been practicing for years and years and years, and our life is still a mess, then somewhere those pieces aren't getting connected. Maybe we have a lot of insight, but we don't really feel like doing things differently. Or maybe we're trying to do things differently all the time. This isn't working, so I'll try this, and this isn't working, so I'll try this. But we don't understand the causality. We don't have the insight. Red flags, right? If we see the same patterns happening in our life again and again and again, whoo, okay, slow down. Illuminate your mind. What's happening? Another red flag. We cause harm. We do something and everyone's hurt. okay, wow, something's not working here. Let me turn on the light. And to appreciate, you know, as we're doing this, as we're illuminating our mind, we can see that our actions, most of the time, if we're not being conscious, are driven by impulses that we are not so in touch with, and our impulses are coming from emotions, from feelings that we may not be aware of. And so becoming completely familiar with means you don't get to skip over those difficult, painful feelings. We have to see into them. I was going to the post office yesterday. I was on PO and errands. And the post office is supposed to open at 10. And I planned things out. I was like, okay, I'm gonna go do these errands. I think I know how much time it's gonna take me. That means I'll be pulling around to the post office right as it's opening at 10. I can take care of business and then get on with my other to-do list items, one of which was writing this talk. And so I do the errands, I pull around to the post office, I go, I'm like, uh-oh, it does not look like they are open. It's 10:04. I wait in the car. Oh, okay, this is so annoying. I'm starting to get a little bit upset, and I go, I drop the stuff off. I go back to the monastery, drop the stuff off in the kitchen, come back. I'm still waiting. It's still not open. I'm starting to get really enraged. And then up drives the fellow that works at the post office and parks his car, and he's like ambling out kind of slowly, and I'm just like on fire. And I'm thinking like, God, you know, I'm totally, and I stop myself and I'm like, whoa, shh, stop, wait. And I check it out. I'm like, wow, I am so pissed. And I even see like, okay, it's coming out now in this moment, but really I'm totally pissed about something else. And I'm bringing it forward. I'm like in a state of anger and it's coming out. And I'm like, okay, I could go in there and yell at this kid and be like, what the hell do you think? It's 10:20 and you're, or I don't know what his life is, right? I have no idea why he's 20 minutes late, none. Or I can take responsibility for my feelings. I can work with them. And I can like not spew my own shit out into the world. And that is what I did. I am happy to report. I sat in the car, and I want to linger here for a moment, because how do you work with a strong emotion? Our Zen training is giving us the way, but we just have to like take it up. So I sat in the car and I let myself just feel, and I just gave space for my anger without adding on to it, without descending into the story of what was going on in my mind. I just let myself be there with it, and I just held steady, stabilized my mind, and my anger self-liberated. It did. I felt fine. I got my stuff. I went in. Good morning. How are you? Da da da. Make sure this package gets to where it's going by Wednesday. Blah 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 blah. Okay, thanks so much. And I left. That part about how do we hold. How do we like let something self-liberate? That's so crucial. And that language, self-liberate, is language that I hear mostly in Dzogchen and Mahamudra teachings from the Tibetan tradition, but we're totally talking about it all the time in Zen too. We just don't use those words. It's seeing into the emptiness of phenomena. So a few weeks ago at the precepts retreat that Shugen Roshi gave, he was talking about the Dharma. And at one point, we were talking about working with difficult emotions. And at one point, I raised my hand and I said, why is there so much emphasis in Zen on tolerating painful states and difficult emotions? And he looked at me and he said, is this a setup? Which made me feel like, oh, I'm supposed to know the answer to this question. Right? Is this a setup? I was like, no, I'm really asking. And he was like, okay, good. And as he answered, I was also thinking okay, let me try and answer this for myself. And I was like, oh yeah, once again, right? Why is there such an emphasis on that? Because when our mind stabilizes in the presence of a strong feeling, when we're not when we can just be there with it, the mind settles and calms and settles and calms, and guess what? That feeling self-liberates. It's empty. It's not made of anything but your freak out. So in order to do this, we need stability of mind, right? That is one of the first things that has to happen in our zazen. That's why people begin with counting the breath, the breasts. There's a very famous story, actually, about... Never mind. Never mind. Counting your breath. Because that practice, even though it might get old and it might get boring, is teaching you how to stabilize your concentration, how to not just be pinging all over the place. The instructions on shamatha, which is meditation that calms the mind, are quite explicit, talking about the mind in the beginning, the untrained mind, like a waterfall, rushing. And we all know that state of mind. And that after a time, the mind can calm and be more like a meandering river. Right? So then you can see more clearly what's going on. It's not just you can see, this thought, this feeling, this impulse. You can see it. You start to really illuminate. And then ultimately, that it becomes like a river merging with the ocean. So zazen really can be like hell when our mind is really busy and we're sitting there and our body is still and we're in this contained environment and our mind is, all hell is breaking loose in our mind. That is like a front row seat to hell. And the problem is that you have to sit there and endure the show and learn how to work with it. You can't skip over that either. No skipping over anything. No skipping over. So to become completely familiar, there's so many ways to get in there and get to know ourselves. And once we understand that that's actually what we're supposed to be doing, and to understand how to do that well, which is why it's so important to work with a teacher, because we can take that, the practice of zazen is not to sit there and do psychoanalysis on yourself, right? There is a meditative practice that's taking place. So how do we illuminate without getting stuck? How do we self-liberate without rejecting, cutting off, chopping off? These are very subtle ways of working with our mind. And anyone can do them, and we're going to learn them by going to one extreme or another, but we need someone to help us recognize that that's what's happening, right? So we're not just off on this detour forever, but someone can say, actually, no, come back, or more like this, or less like that. And I was speaking with Hogen Sensei recently about I was reflecting on something that I had done that I regretted, and kind of asking, you know, how do I not do this again? Okay, so this is a good question for a practitioner to consider. Having done this thing that I regret and has caused harm, how do I make sure that I don't do it again? And he was talking about his approach that I found very helpful, so I offer it out here, of working with energy and becoming aware of his energy and letting that be like a red flag for him. And he used his own example of feeling when he knows that if he starts to feel very aggressive or extremely self-righteous about something, when that feeling arises strong in his body, that even though it feels really good and it feels really right and all everything's saying like go, 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 that he knows he needs to put the brakes on. And when I was thinking about my own life example that I was working with, the quality of energy was very different. It did not have an aggressive quality at all. I was trying to apply his teaching to my own experience, and I was like, oof, the quality of this energy is like murky, and the word that kept coming to mind was crenellated, like filled with like kinks. But it doesn't matter. The language that I give to it and whether, you know, I can communicate that to someone else or not, doesn't matter. It's me knowing that feeling, knowing that energy, being able to identify it so that when it arises, and I have to be awake, right? So when it arises again, I recognize it like, oh, this is that state. It is not reliable. It is not a trustworthy place from which to make a decision, from which to act. Stop. So we can go deeper and deeper into our own exploration. We can purify the mind, illuminate the mind, clarify the mind, so that we can completely see it. We need to take responsibility for our feelings and to take care of them. Nobody else can do that for us. And we can do this in a loving way that's compassionate toward ourselves. And we can recognize that this is an essential part of every human life. We are emotional beings. And whether we're in touch with our emotions or not, they are driving our actions. So we need to get in touch. We need to clarify them. The other day, I had one of my monastic brothers come to me and say, can I ask you about something? Your emotional response, are you clear? In essence, I'm paraphrasing. Are you clear about where it's coming from? And in that moment, I thought, yeah, I am clear. And I so appreciated that question. I so appreciated like living in a community where someone was gonna ask me that. I feel like we should be really doing that for each other. And because that question came into me, I reflected on it and I thought about it. Am I clear? What is happening? Which is good. That's the illumination. Trolog Rinpoche writes, enlightenment is not given to us as a gift. We attain enlightenment by realizing different aspects of ourself until nothing remains hidden. We must understand the workings of our own mind. And there is, you know, overlap, I think, often in within the Dharma as it's taught here in the West between Dharma practice and psychology. And there's overlap because they're both working with mind, okay? So there's going to be overlap. But we need to appreciate that from a Dharma perspective, that psychological insight is crucial, and it's just another, like, layer of the sacred mandala, right? Like, really, what is it? What is happening? Oh, my God, it's all empty. It's all arising. Shugen Roshi talked in his Vasatsu talk this week about the unborn, and I was asking him, like, unborn, but a thing feels like it's born. It feels like, and he said, well, what does it mean when we say something's born? He said, something new comes into being. And he was like, exactly. So if you truly look carefully at anything that's arising, nothing new has come into being. Look, see it, right? That moment on the ground, bewildered, here, I just fell, looking back, causes and conditions from a lifetime coming into fruition to create each moment, and it feels like all hell is breaking loose, and you look closely, and okay, well, maybe it is, but it's all causally connected. It's not confusing, not really. It's not fixed. It's all workable. Insight into how the mind works is our genuine refuge. That is where we're going to find peace. Seeing how our mind functions, we can learn how to use it. I know that an important part for some of you who did the retreat with Shugen Roshi yesterday on the critical mind and loving kindness was appreciating the practice of metta, of generating loving kindness, filling the mind and the heart with that intention, that energy, that vibrancy. Knowing our own mind, we can learn how to use it. And then we no longer need to be protecting or defending or avoiding. We can open. We can live in that actual connection. We can love. We're the only ones. It's very much connected to the suffering of the world. It's not a part. If we're looking out and reading the headlines, the awful shooting that happened in New Zealand, and thinking, like, what is going on? This is crazy. Well, it's no mystery. It's no mystery. So it's important work. It's really important work. This is where the peace is going to begin. Here. There's a teaching about the moon. You know, the full moon is the bright, enlightened mind. And that even in the beginning of practice, we might not see the full moon, but we can see that waxing moon. We can see it right away.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.org.